All right, Mitch is gone for hour two, but I've called in a replacement in Kelis Robinette from the Kansas City Star, Wichita Eagles. You can find his work there. Kelis found himself caught in the middle of this conversation that was annoying me earlier about, of course, the merits of one Brad Underwood, thanks to the fact that Brad just destroyed Michigan last night. And congratulations to him. Congratulations to Brad. Certainly rooting for him. It would be great if he wound up at K-State here one day. It would be great to have that team instead of the team that K-State had this year. But my point in all of this has been, do we have to do this conversation, do this whole song and dance every single time that Brad Underwood wins a game now, or a game of consequence, because there are about to be a bunch of those in the NCAA tournament? Why, Kelis? Why is it that we are in this situation once again?
Yeah, I think it's just a rule or fact of life. If you're someone who follows Kansas State basketball at this point, there are just so many other former coaches out there who are still working, who worked here. And, you know, you think what might have been, and Brad is obviously the most recent one. He's obviously having the most success at Illinois. They're looking like a top five team right now. But, I mean, beyond that, look who else is out there. You got Frank Martin in South Carolina. From that same staff, Matt Figger is at Austin Peay. Lon Kruger's at Oklahoma. Dana Altman's at Oregon. I mean, there's probably even a few more. Who's the guy at UTSA? I'm spacing on his name.
The former really good.
Yeah, Steve Henson. Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen anybody say, bring his name up yet, but maybe at one point they will. Yeah, I don't know. To me, it's ancient history. I mean, when was he interviewed for the job? 2012, when they hired Bruce Weber. That's a long time ago. I think we should all probably quit living in the past at this point. But yes, I got roped into the conversation. Lesson learned on my part.
Yeah, and I mean, I say all that, and I am going to have a little bit of a discussion about it here just because it's become a hot button issue once again. But like, yeah, he was interviewed in 2012, which was when he was on Frank's staff. And that to me is just a token interview at the time, because John Curry clearly was not going to hire somebody off of Frank's staff based on the way that all of that ended and what his concerns really were at that point in time. Like, he wanted to go the opposite way and hire somebody that was more squeaky clean. And that's definitely what he got in Bruce Weber. Let me ask you this question though. Like, what, at that point, now Brad went to Stephen F. Austin and immediately had a bunch of success, took him to the tournament 3 years in a row. Do you think if Brad Underwood was the hire in 2012, that he would have been ready to go and things would go the way that everybody seems to think they would have here?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I would definitely like to, you know, take a visit to that alternate universe and see how things worked out. I would even throw in another caveat. I was actually thinking about this after I got out of this conversation, but Brad was in the mix to be, you know, associate head coach here or an assistant even after Bruce came in and was hired. They ended up going with Chris Lowry for that spot, who, you know, he's done a very good job. But like, hey, what happens if they retain him as the associate head coach? Does things go any differently on that end? That's another thing you could throw into it. But if we're only just talking about the head coaching spot, I'm with you. I just don't think that as much as they wanted to get away from Frank Martin at that time, just hiring his number one assistant probably wasn't really among the things that they wanted to do at that point. Would it have worked out? I don't know. Maybe. I think right now it's easy to say that it would have, given the fact of hindsight. But I mean, it took him, well, this is his fourth year at Illinois, right? And it's only just now, like, really, really rolling. It took him a little bit to get going. He had the 1 year at Oklahoma State. They made the tournament, but really didn't do anything else. So, could he have won here? Sure. Would he have? I don't know. I don't think any of us know the answer to that. And the real big question is, would he have won at a higher level than Bruce Weber did? Because, I mean, that first year, Bruce was really good. They won a Big 12 championship with all those old guys that Frank Martin and Brad Underwood had recruited. And he took him to a second Big 12 title years later. So it's an interesting topic you could debate endlessly, because we don't know the answer to it.
Yeah, like I think he would have won here. I highly doubt that he would have hit the high highs that Bruce did. But there was a veteran team when he would have come in there. I don't think that they would have won the Big 12 championship in all likelihood, just because there's some level of learning curve there. But I think what people would argue now is, hey, you get that coach for life and you wouldn't have to deal with the ups and downs of the Bruce Weber roller coaster. And like, I understand all that. I think the point in it that I would make as far as like, let's not just have this discussion every single time this comes up with Brad is like, you know, there's the revisionist history of just wanting to chop down any of Bruce Weber's highs, which did happen. I mean, you can't take those away. Those did happen. And I guess the other point that people will bring up is 2016. So you have the opportunity then to go, I mean, I say the opportunity. Brad obviously was looking to move away from Stephen F. Austin because he takes the Oklahoma State job, but you have the opportunity there to go fire Bruce in the midst of the very beginning, the genesis of Barry, Dean, and Cam, and go make that move, which is a tough one, again, I think, to debate, because right after that, you got an Elite Eight and a Big 12 championship. So, I mean, that's hard to say whether or not that's in totality the right decision or not. Like, right decision for the basketball program in 2021? Yeah, it would look like that going after Brad at that point would have been the right decision for 2021. But again, you're talking about a banner that wouldn't have been hung and a deep Elite Eight run that may or may not have happened.
Right. And I think the thing that probably gets lost in this whole debate is anyone who says, like, you know, dag nabbit, I really wish Brad Underwood would have been the guy. If you just compare what he did to Bruce Weber's first seven seasons here, I think you would probably lean that Bruce was the more accomplished coach. To hang three banners and to coach two players who will probably end up having their jerseys retired at Bramlage Coliseum. I mean, that's a heck of a run for 7 years, even if they did miss the NCAA tournament twice in there. Yeah, it's just one of those, alternate timeline kind of things that I guess we'll be talking about forever. But, yeah, I'm with you. I mean, it's ancient history. I mean, if you're going to talk about that, why not just go back and say, well, what if Lon Kruger never left? What if he was here for 40 years or something like that? It's just at some point you got to move on.
All right. Well, how about this one for you? Would it be a good investment if K-State were able to get the money somehow right now to pay like $9 million total in buyout money to get rid of Bruce Weber and go take in Brad Underwood as the coach right now?
So you're saying if it was within the realm of possibility that next year Brad Underwood would be coaching at Kansas State instead of Bruce Weber? That's what you're asking.
Is that worth $9 million?
Probably.
Potentially, whatever the difference would be in what you're paying salary-wise, I assume you'd be paying him more than Bruce on an annual basis.
Yeah, probably. I mean, again, it's a hypothetical. It's not my money, so easy to spend it, right? But yeah, if you could make that switch at this exact moment in time, I think you would want to. Sure.
All right. As far as this basketball team is actually concerned, the one that's playing right now, they have lost, or they just lost at West Virginia on Saturday. It snapped the two-game win streak that they had going on. How much to you is there to take from the game that we saw on Saturday?
Not too much, really. The only thing that it really proved to us was that the team's bad when Nigel Pack doesn't play, but we already knew that. They're 0-5 without him this season. They've lost those games by a little over an average of 20 points. And I mean, I was impressed, honestly. They played West Virginia as hard as they did. Midway through the second half, it was still an 8-point game without Pack, without guys making shots. You know, it could easily been out of hand already. And I guess it did get out of hand. West Virginia won by 22. But no, I just kind of throw that game away in the trash can. There's some guys on this team they can win without, like DeJuan, like Antonio, on a very limited basis. But then there are other guys like Mike and Nigel. You take them out, you lose some of the few scores you've got. Offense, just the offense, which isn't great to begin with, gets even more limited. And I just know as soon as I heard that Nigel Pack wasn't playing, my interest shot down. I knew they weren't winning. The only thing you can really hope for at this point is that he comes back. You have him for Iowa State. You have him for the Big 12 tournament. You see what happens there.
To me, the interesting conversations here are about like what, you know, it's not what happens against Iowa State. Can they win a game in the Big 12 tournament and make a run there? Like, it's about what's happening next year. And that seems to now be, I mean, it feels like an inevitability that, that Bruce is going to be back, both based on what Gene Taylor has said publicly and just not really hearing much else behind the scenes on that front to the contrary. So I'm like, okay, if he's going to be back, how do you improve the three things that, that Fran Fraschilla mentioned to you needed to be improved? Three-point shooting, not turning the ball over, and basically like getting older, like just having a transfer. I mean, to me, the transfer is like that, that basically could be the answer to at least two and a half of the three problems that they have that, that Fran outlined there, because I don't think they're getting any better shooting the ball with the guys that are currently on the roster. Like I asked this question yesterday on the show, but how many guys can you think of under Bruce that have dramatically improved their shooting throughout their career? I can remember Shane Southwell's one-year spike, and then Wesley Owundu going into his senior year, actually developing a somewhat competent but still not great jumper and three-point shot. They're just – so that's happened twice that I can really remember throughout his entire tenure, and you're expecting like three or four guys this offseason to dramatically improve?
Yeah, I was going to say Wes did improve. I mean, I remember how rough his shot was as a freshman. He was significantly better as a senior. But still, he was never like a, you know, what you'd call a sharpshooter, even though he was pretty good by the end of it. I mean, the one guy you could maybe hope that would make a big improvement would be Luke Dusuki, just because he missed so much time this season. I have my doubts just based on how bad he's been from three-point range this year. I don't have the stats up in front of me, but I mean, what's he made? Like three three-pointers all year? It's not many, and he's not even being guarded right now. So I'm not holding my breath that he's going to come out and be a 40% three-point shooter next year, but that's the one guy where you could say, all right, if he gets a full offseason to work in and comes in next year with some more legs under him, a little bit more confidence, maybe he could come in and actually provide a spark there. But otherwise, I'm with you. You know, I don't see Deshaun Gordon or Shelton Miguel or any of these other guys suddenly just becoming sharpshooters. So I think they need to go out and add some veteran talent somewhere else. And it's got to be from the transfer portal. They're not going to go out and – it's very unlikely that they're going to go out and find a incoming freshman that can help them that way. But, I mean, one of the things Bruce has been complaining about all year, they don't have a bucket getter. They don't have enough passers. They don't have enough shooters. Well –
and they're young.
And they're young. So the easiest way to fix all those things is to go get an older transfer, even if he can only help you for one or two seasons. I mean, how good would Justin Edwards, he wasn't, amazing in the Kansas State uniform, but if they could add him right now, I think they, a player like that, I think that would really help. So that to me is I think they have a higher ceiling next year, even if they don't add anybody and these guys come back and improve just a little bit. But if they really want to make a jump up to where they are contending for the postseason again, I think they definitely have to go out and find somebody with offensive skills on the transfer market. And if I were Bruce and them, I would ignore defense and just hopefully teach that to anybody else you bring in. The offense has just been so brutal at times this season. I think if you can add one or two guards or wings who can create their own shot and score for you, that's what you need to add.
All right, part two with Kellis Robinette is coming up next. We are going to get into football. I'll ask Kellis the question that we've been answering this week. What is the biggest question facing K-State football this spring? That's next. I'm back with Kellis Robinette, Kansas City Star, Wichita Eagles. Plenty of ways to find his work. You can follow him on Twitter at Kellis Robinette as well. We'll get to spring football here in just a sec. On the basketball front, Kellis, I am hoping that the transfer portal is explored thoroughly by this staff, and I think they need it to be next year. To be quite honest, if things are going to keep going after next year, how do you see how desperate they should be to be hitting the portal right now?
Bruce has only got the 2 years left on his contract. And assuming he does come back next season, I mean, next year will be, like Pat Knight once famously said at Big 12 Media Days, this is a contract extension or get fired type of season for me. That's Bruce will never, I wouldn't think he'd come out and be so blunt that he'd say that himself. That's what it'll be next year, and if he's not if this team's not back in the tournament, it's going to be hard to sell the fans that the staff should come back for another go around. So if I think that this year they'll explore the transfer portal a little bit more than they have previously, just because I think there's going to be more options available. But you're right, they haven't had a ton of success there. I think we've talked about this before, but outside of Edwards, I mean, who else even comes to mind as somebody who's been an impact transfer? You think of anybody?
No, I mean, there's no one. I mean, like they tried the Mato Sala thing. And that,
I guess McCall Mayween maybe would count, but he came in from JUCO.
Yeah, he went JUCO. I mean, that's, you know, they've had some guys that have started other places and went JUCO and came through here. But in terms of like just playing the transfer market, no, it's been the last 5 years. It's been Justin Edwards. And really, I mean, they got him a couple of years before that, but he played within the last 5 years. It's been Justin Edwards, Mato Sala, and Casey Uziagu. Like that's
okay. That's right. That's right. And and he's been okay, but you definitely need somebody to make a bigger impact than Casey's made this season. And, you know, I wish I had some names to throw out there for you right now of who they could go get. I guess we'll find out who hits the market here once the season start to end. But, yeah, I mean, I think that one of the biggest mistakes they made this season was leaving that last scholarship spot open and not trying to get better with it. And if I were them, I would not make that same mistake again next season. If you got the opportunity to add somebody who can help you out on offense, which seems to be the one big thing that they need, I would do everything I could to go find that person and add them to the roster. Because yeah. I agree with what Fran Fraschilla said in that article I wrote last week. You know, everybody else has got to be in the transfer portal. Nobody else is has this approach where let's just go as young as possible and in 4 years be old. Everybody else is trying to find ways to speed up the process and get old quickly. And that's something that Kansas State's going to have to do if they want to compete again next season.
Yeah, like the days of having to sit around and wait 3 or 4 years to rebuild, like that's just not a thing. That's not a thing anymore. And so there should be no patience, really, as far as that goes. All right, so spring football did start today. What to you is the biggest storyline of spring?
I mean, maybe it's a cop out, but I'm really focused on the quarterbacks. And I think it's more interesting without Skylar Thompson involved, just because you've got Will Howard and Jake Rubley back there, guys who have never played in spring football before. We've seen Will Howard start in 7 games, but he was doing that, I mean, just completely raw out of high school, missed spring ball last year. Jake Rubley enrolled early, and he's going to get to do what we didn't get to see from Will Howard last year, go through spring ball. So I really want to see what those two guys bring, because even though this season Skylar Thompson is clearly going to be the starter and handle most of the passes, I mean, it's one of those two guys is the future, and this is going to be our first chance to see what they're about, how good they might be, and we'll find out who the backup quarterback is going to be as well. So I'm pretty interested on that. If you switch to the other side of the ball, my eyes are probably it's tough between linebacker and safety and cornerback, just because there's some question marks to all those spots. But I would say linebacker, after losing Elijah and Justin last year, who are they going to plug in and play in the middle of the defense? I'm interested to see that as well.
Well, I mean, the defense as a whole just has a lot of, no pun intended, holes everywhere. You know, like defensive end will be very interesting as well. I guess we know a lot of the bodies that will be there, but like, do you have somebody who can be as high impact as what Wyatt Hubert was? And even then, like, you lose Drew Wiley too on the interior of the defensive line. So at every level, there are a bunch of holes. But I don't know. Like, if we're thinking beyond just what the sexy, easier sell to fans is, like the easier way to get clicks and listens on everything is to talk about the quarterbacks and what's going on with Rubley and Howard. But what's going to be more important to the team next year will be linebacker. You know, I mean, if you're wanting to go number one, like most impactful spring storylines, to me, it's linebacker, because you lose Hughes and Sullivan, and in particular Sullivan, who was, you know, like I think honorable mention, Big 12 type of linebacker is pretty appropriate for about what he was, but bona fide, legitimate, solid starter in the Big 12. And now you go to a place where you have a lot of bodies, but like, are these guys all just depth pieces? Like, can anybody actually step up and replace the level of production that Elijah Sullivan had? That's what I worry about, because, you know, like Daniel Green and Cody Fletcher are both like solid rotational linebackers from what we've seen in their career so far. But frontline guys, I don't know. We'll see. And Eric Munoz, I mean, they're saying all the right things about him. They really like him. And sounds like he's come in and fit the culture really well. But, like, you know, he has just a couple of starts in his career at Utah State. Is he ready to be an impact guy at linebacker, actually? And then we're talking about a couple walk-ons, like Austin Moore, for instance. So I know they're high on, but, like, I don't know if he's – is that Ryan Mueller, like, ready to come in and be a walk-on as a total stud? I don't know that I'm experiencing any of that. So I just feel like there are a ton of questions there at linebacker.
Yeah, it feels like they've got four or five guys you'd be really comfortable with being, you know, like number two, number three linebacker on your team, but not necessarily the number one guy. And who's going to emerge and be that leader of the defense, the leading tackler kind of guy who fills in for the veteran linebackers they lost. I think I'm with you. If you're looking about – specifically what makes a bigger impact next season, it's there. But at the same time, I would say you could say that same thing about a lot of spots on the defense. Are these transfers they brought in at defensive back as good as advertised? I think that's a big question. I mean, if so, and you can put Julius Brents and Russ Yeast back there in starting spots, then all of a sudden that answers a whole lot of questions. Maybe you're not so worried about offenses running all over you like they did at the end of last season. But what if they need a little bit of time to develop and they aren't maybe as good as advertised? Then all of a sudden some of those concerns come back in. So I'm with you. I think linebacker, you know, who's going to be that stud linebacker? I don't think we have the answer yet. We'll maybe start to find out in spring ball. But there are a lot of questions across the defense.
And then even, like, offensively, I'm looking at, like, all right, what's going on at the skill positions outside of Deuce? I mean, we know that Deuce is going to be a stud. Is a stud, but at receiver, you know, I mean, they seem to be bought all the way back in on Malik Knowles. Like, okay, let me see that for sure. Like, let me see that actually happen and come to fruition. Beyond that, man, I went through and looked at the list of receivers that they have on the roster the other day. And I was like, okay, I mean, boy, like, Malik better be good. I mean, you know, Sebastian Taylor, Phillip Brooks, like, we'll see. We'll see. And then even tight end, you know, I mean, losing Briley Moore is a pretty big blow there. And, you know, you're still dealing with Sammy Wheeler recovering from an injury. So, like, Nick Leonard, Connor Fox, like, are those guys all ready to roll? And Imadar Bebe, you know, forget about him, but Imadar Bebe also.
Well, the skill positions is a really good point. I mean, let me ask you this. Outside of Malik Knowles and Deuce Vaughn, like, who else really is exciting you there? Who would be next in line?
Like maybe Joe Urban, or if I'm believing in the potential of Imadar Bebe, or, like, I don't know, Keon Mosey popping or something. But yeah, point taken. There's not a great answer.
Yeah, and you know who are they going to develop behind those guys? Because I do have quite a bit of confidence in Knowles and Vaughn. I mean, Deuce obviously was great all last season. You know he's going to be good. Malik came on late last year. I think that's probably a sign of better things to come. I think he'll be a pretty solid number one receiver. And without Sebastian Taylor out there in the spring, he's the other guy that maybe you'd say, okay, if he gets back healthy, he could be counted on too. But otherwise, like who's gonna come up and help the receivers, you know, be a better unit next season? I think that was one thing that really limited that offense last year. Maybe it's just because they didn't have Skyler, but I mean, who did they throw to most of the time? It was Deuce Vaughn and Briley Moore. It wasn't the receivers. So that's definitely got to change, especially now that you got Skylar Thompson back. And maybe we start to see somebody emerge there. And then at running back, I'm still kind of, you know, always holding out hope that somebody like Jacardier Wright could figure it out and all of a sudden help a little bit more. Keon Mosey, Joe Irvin, I'd almost completely forgotten about him. But you're right, he could be a nice impact guy if he actually comes back and gives them something. So yeah, I mean, if you're into spring football, into what might be coming up around the corner, it's an interesting time. There's a lot to look for this season.
Boy, and I forgot about Sebastian Taylor's injury too. That's that's another thing at receiver, man. Maybe Jalen Travis is ready to go and jump up. We'll see. All right, Kellis, appreciate the time as always. We will do it again next week. I think we should be okay to do it again next week. Hopefully, back at our regularly scheduled time.
All right, looking forward to it.
There's Kellis Robinette, Kansas City Star, Wichita Eagles. You know him. pretty famous around these parts. Mitch has left me a number one song of the day, and this should, if you are having like a down day, if you're having a day without much energy, this is going to pump you right back up, man. I promise you that. Next.
Peace up, A-Town Down. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
This is a 12-weeker, ladies and gentlemen, a 12-weeker. This was at number one on the charts for 12 weeks in the great year of 2004. Man, right when Scott Drew was getting things up and running at Baylor, just to put a bow on this whole show, huh? Yeah, by Usher featuring Lil Jon and Ludacris. This is a classic. Classic from my high school days. This song was massive. Still is. You start playing this around any millennial, they're going to lose it. Now, the reach goes further than just millennials, okay? But this is a millennial killer right here, is what it is. If you are unfamiliar, for the uninitiated, Usher is an American singer, songwriter, actor, businessman, and dancer. Businessman. Not a businessman. I'm a businessman. He was born in Dallas, Texas, but raised in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Usher has done pretty well for himself. You know what? Before I give you the details on just how well he's done for himself, I'm just going to say, like, Usher was the guy that I remember in middle school when, like, You Got It Bad was out. That song first came out, and I was like, man, I am so jealous of this guy because the ladies loved him. Just love the guy. It's like, man, whatever I need to do, if I can just get some of that Usher shine on me, I would take any and every bit of it. Usher has sold 23.8 million albums, 38.2 million digital songs in the United States. Internationally, Usher has sold 80 million records worldwide. 80 million. Making him one of the best-selling music artists of all time. In fact, at the end of 2009, Billboard named Usher the second most successful artist of the 2000s to Eminem? Fuck. Eminem was number one? What? Eminem?
You're kidding, right?
I would not have thought Eminem was that. I mean, I know Eminem's...
He's popular, but...
Yeah. But that seems weird to me. Like, that I would think that somebody more poppy. Yeah. The old school Eminem. I do like old school Eminem. The number one Hot 100 artist of the 2000s decade... Hang on, I got lost here. Okay, so Billboard named him the number one Hot 100 artist of the 2000s decade. That's in large part because this song spent 12 weeks at number one, people. In 2019, Billboard also placed him at number 14 on their Greatest of All Time Hot 100 Artist list. Man, I mean, that's heady stuff. Like, I knew Usher was a big deal. I don't know that I would have guessed Billboard would have him at basically number 15 or number 14 all time on, like, the Greatest Popular Artists Ever list. Usher has 8 studio albums. This is the 4th of 9 number one hits? Okay, we're looking this up now. Usher's number one hits. Guy's got 9 number one hits. Usher's number one hits. And nobody can just, you know, give it to me in a nice order here. I have to go to his YouTube page. Like, come on. All right. My Way, looks like that hit number one. Confessions hit number one. Oh, these are... Nice and Slow, You Remind Me, You Got It Bad. Oh, You Remind Me, man, that's another one. Yeah, Burn came after this. Confessions Part 2, My Boo with Alicia Keys. Love in This Club with my man Young Jeezy. Yes. OMG featuring Will.i.am. And looks like that's it. Those are the Usher number one hits for you. Confessions is the 4th studio album. Billboard ranked Confessions as the top solo album of the 2000s decade. According to Billboard, it is the second best-selling album of the 2000s decade in the U.S. behind Eminem's The Marshall Mathers LP, with over 8 million copies sold in 2004. So I guess there's your Eminem connection right there. The Marshall Mathers LP did that well that it wound up being making Eminem the most successful artist of the 2000s. Like Many Club Bangers. Now we're into the real stuff. Like Many Club Bangers. When you hear us say banger, the song bangs from the term club bangers. This one is set in a club. where Usher is spending some time with his homies. Mitch, did you actually write this? Did you actually write this that I'm reading right now, where Usher was spending time with his homies? You're forcing me to read that on the air? He had a girlfriend, but she's not there, and a girl in the club steps in to seduce him. Uh-oh. Throughout the song, he's trying to decide just how far to let this go. Every time he tries to take the moral high ground and behave himself, well, he's overruled by a much louder voice that says, yeah. We're not sure how the night ends. Usher may have some confessions for later. Very nice, Mitch. I know you didn't write that, but very nice. This song was produced by Lil Jon, who added the vocals. Most of his productions, including this one, feature a crunk sound with lots of heavy beats. Makes me happy that Mitch is putting together a script for me that has spending time with the homies, crunk, and club bangers all in the same thing. Yes, crunk is the sound that Lil Jon really pioneered. And then he basically like pivoted himself into being like a straight-up DJ. It's a pretty nice pivot later career for Lil Jon. This hit number one in the U.S. before the album was ever released. Confessions sold over 1 million copies the first week it was released. And at one point, three singles, Yeah, Confessions Part 2, and Burn, from the album were in the top 10. Usher became only the third artist to do this after the Beatles and the Bee Gees. The Bee Gees? The Bee Gees? What the hell are the Bee Gees? They had three songs in the top 10 at once? Come on, man. Nobody's making the club turn up like this, though, from the Bee Gees. The Ludaverse. Ludaverse, the best part here. This single ranked number 11 on the Billboard Hot 100 all-time top songs. We got to stop burying the lead, bitch. That needs to be the lead here. Yeah, by Usher featuring Lil Jon and Ludacris is the number 11 song ever on the Billboard Hot 100 all-time top songs. So take this all in. If you are unfamiliar, as I said earlier for the uninitiated, drink it in, because you are listening to the 11th greatest Billboard Hot 100 song of all time. You're welcome. Ask us anything next. Bee Gees, man. I guess I've heard of them. I've like heard the name before, but what are they, like a knockoff version of the Beatles or something?
Careful, also, you might anger some people. 10?
I don't. I have to play the part of the ignorant guy here, you know? I mean, when it's, I am unabashedly millennial. I can't be running around here acting like I know who the hell the Bee Gees are. Ruin my street cred. My millennial street cred. What inanimate object do you wish you could eliminate from existence? It's a good question. Inanimate object that, like, makes me angry. I don't know if there's, like, anything that I can think of that really, truly makes me angry right now. You got anything on that one, Steven? I need some inspiration here.
The elusive... let me preface this. Are you into, like, car mechanics at all? Do you work on your own vehicle?
There is nothing in this world that I know less about than car mechanics. I know more about the Bee Gees back catalog than I know about car mechanics.
Okay. I'll let you in on a secret. One thing that angers everybody who works on vehicles is the 10mm socket.
All right, get it out of here.
Because it gets lost so easy, and it's hard to find.
All right, we'll get rid of the 10mm socket. It's out of here. What is the weirdest thing you've seen in someone else's home? What a question. God, I wish I could, like, give that some thought to think about what it is that I've seen in someone else's home, because I don't have a very good answer on that, but that is a great question to ask somebody else. I need to go into more people's homes, I suppose. The absolute worst name you could ever give your child. What is the... I think the number one was Liam. that Mason got all mad about. So am I supposed to say Liam here?
My
the worst name
Keith.
You could ever give your child? How about I'll play to my audience here. We'll say Sir. S-I-R-R. Sir. Name him Sir. It's a Sir Parker reference, everybody. Sir Parker reference, okay? Let's not be naming kids Sir. We don't need anybody that. If great question. If peanut butter wasn't called peanut butter, what would it be called? Crack. Because I can't keep it in my house because I just eat it too much. If I have a jar of peanut butter in my house, like, the whole thing's going down. So I cannot keep it in my house. What movie would be greatly improved if it was made into a musical? None. Zero. Nada. Because musicals are the most boring thing to exist on the planet. I cannot do a musical. At all. Man, my guy Jason loves Grease. Always trying to tell me about Grease. I'm like, dude, I can't. I mean, no offense to John Travolta, but I don't have the patience to sit around and, like, wade through a bunch of songs. I don't enjoy the songs, and if the movie is just all songs, why am I going to enjoy the movie? I mean, I have a hard enough time getting to the movies anyway, in the first place, like actually watching movies. What was I getting crap for not having seen the other day? Oh, Rocky. Haven't seen Rocky. There's a revelation for everybody. That'll make everybody mad if I didn't make you mad enough with the Bee Gees thing already. Haven't seen Rocky. He runs up some steps, he drinks some eggs, feel like I get the gist, and he loses, by the way, too. He loses, right? So, I'm supposed to watch a movie about a loser who's drinking eggs.
I see your point, but I'm surprised you haven't seen it.
I don't like sports movies. That's in the realm enough of being a sports movie. Sports movies are typically far too corny for me. Don't enjoy them. Like, I don't... Hoosiers, Rudy, we've had that conversation many a time. But like Rocky, if I wanted to just watch somebody go lose a boxing match and drink a bunch of eggs, I would just film myself drinking eggs and going and fighting anybody. Because by the way, I mean, I've never thrown a punch in my life. I'm sure I would get destroyed. I know I would lose. I don't need to go waste 2 hours doing that on TBS.